Episode 1097, My Strength is My Story with Beth Bruno, A Voice Becoming.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Staring at a stop sign, watching people drive by, T-Mac on the radio.
Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have on here with us today as our special guest, a passionate, caring, loving woman. Her name is Beth Bruno. She wrote a brand new book called A Voice Becoming. It's a year-long mother-daughter journey into passionate, purpose living. We go deep. We have a lot of fun. You'll want to stay tuned. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Beth's, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already haven't had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy Everyday Solutions to Live, Love, and Impact. Well, I really wish you were there for our coffee chat because Beth and I had a lot of fun and we got deep really fast. We talked about human trafficking. We talked about really beginning to establish our children, a rites of passage, this connection that we as women should have with our own daughters. She has a heart of gold for creating a global sisterhood. And I'm telling you, you will be fascinated. So without further ado, let's welcome in Beth Bruno, A Voice Becoming. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. Today is My Strength is My Story series, and I am delighted to have with us Beth Bruno. She is a wife of 22 years and a mom to three children, two daughters and one son. Her heart has led her down the path to prevent human trafficking. In this, Beth has launched a nonprofit in 2009, A Face to Reframe. She is also a volunteer manager of domestic sex trafficking for the You Count campaign, a Colorado-based global anti-sex trafficking ministry where Beth leads local efforts in victim services for those impacted by sex trafficking. Beth is a speaker and now a brand new author of her new book, A Voice Becoming, a year-long mother-daughter journey into passionate, purposed living. Beth, you have a lot of stories to share with us. Welcome, my friend and sister in Christ.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Oh, well, it is exciting to have you on here. Talk about a journey. It's a very interesting journey that you have been on, and I cannot wait to dive deep into it. But before we do, what keeps your feet to the fire and your heart passionate?
Well, you just named a few in my bio. That certainly keeps my feet to the fire. I think what motivates me is I want to change the world. Is that too small of a goal?
I think it's a beautiful goal.
I'm motivated by the things that breaks Jesus' heart, and I feel compelled to respond. And right now, that looks like human trafficking. But it might be another issue in the future. But the human trafficking piece definitely keeps my feet to the fire, especially this time of year. January is the National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. Mm-hmm. And so we always try and do a lot in the month of January. And that coincides with my book release this year. And so January is going to be extra crazy. Can't wait.
Woo! I mean, talk about a party. You just came off of New Year's and now you're celebrating a new book and all of this and bringing awareness to human trafficking. For those people who, I don't know, maybe they bury their heads in the sand, honestly, because you turn on the TV and we don't like to hear what's going on. It just is kind of, you know, it's sad and there's a lot of pain and sorrow out there. Talk a little bit about human trafficking and what's really going on with that now, because I think a lot of people, it doesn't happen here. And I know where I live, it happens here and it's very sad. And we live in a rural state.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're just on the brink of kind of turning the corner with awareness saturation in our country, where people are starting to see enough on the news and in major television shows like Hawaii 5-0 that are tackling this, that they're starting to realize, okay, maybe this is a United States issue, but it's bringing it down to our communities. Is it really happening in our, you know, rural towns, our small towns? I mean, a college town, is it really happening here? And it does. You know, in a nutshell, human trafficking is whenever a person is compelled to work or perform sex acts through force or fraud or coercion, or in the case of sex trafficking, the individual is not yet 18 years old. And so what that means is in college towns like mine, we see a lot of minors under 18-year-olds who maybe things at home are chaotic and they've decided I can do it better on my own, and they take off. They run to a bigger city like Denver, and they end up being exploited because they have basic needs that need to be met, like food and shelter and sometimes drugs. And so in exchange for basic needs, they are exploited sexually, and then they are taken up and down highways. And that's why in rural communities, probably like yours, we see that a lot, because they just travel and they're taken around to different cities, and then they pop back home. They come back to school. Teachers don't know the questions to ask or the signs to look for, and they've returned to school because it's safe and familiar, but they take off again because they feel like now they're changed. They're fish out of water. They have the scarlet letter on them. Everybody must know and be able to tell, and so they take off again. And we enter into this cycle of kids who are in and out of trafficking situations, and nobody knows what to look. Nobody knows that they're looking at a victim. Because what Hollywood has told us is that victims are in chains, or they have, you know, barcodes, or they're kept locked in closets. And that's so not what a victim looks like in our country.
How can you find out if your state or even your community has issues with human trafficking to become aware of that?
Most states at this point have coalitions, some sort of anti-trafficking coalition or community response team or task force. And so I would just start there. Google your county, human trafficking task force in your county, and see what pops up. I would be surprised at this point if most of the larger areas in our country don't have some sort of task force. So that's a great place to start. If you don't find anything, I would say go to your local law enforcement agency and sit down and just start chatting with major decision makers in the law enforcement agency and ask them, what are you doing? What do you know? What have you been trained on? What do you think is going on in our community? And if they're just entering into more awareness and training, then as a concerned citizen, what a great opportunity to say, how can I help? How can I assist? What do you need? And to start gathering a tribe of people who care enough to come alongside of those who can really make a difference and support them.
Beautiful. Well, we'll have that information, obviously, in the show notes so people can find that and locate the problems and identify that, because unfortunately we are so busy that we kind of keep up with that, whatever our stuff involves, whatever that pain and sorrow is in our own lives. That's the only thing that's as far as our horizon, our eyes can see. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important, because I know in our community, we have had girls actually come out from and, you know, human trafficking and tell their story. It's been obviously a process for them, but it's also been very educational for those who really have no clue that it's going on. Now, you started the nonprofit A Face to Reframe. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, since we're talking about this right now.
Sure. It came out of my grad school program. I was studying the use of photography in community development, and how if you put a camera in the hands of those who have frequently been the subjects or the objects of images used to express, you know, the issue that they were facing, if you put the camera in their hands and empowered them to tell their own story and to speak into their own change, then real sustainable change would occur. So that was kind of A Face to Reframe, came out of this desire to reframe with dignity those who had been marred and disenfranchised. And that was in Seattle about 9 years ago. And then we moved here to Colorado, and I started doing work like that on the streets of Denver with youth who were living on the streets experiencing homelessness. And that was an eye-opener for me to begin to understand what domestic human trafficking looked like in cities here in our country. And one thing led to another. And we eventually narrowed our focus to the issue of human trafficking and broadened our programs from just photography to community building and training and prevention work and other art forms as well. And so now we're focused locally. My county up here in northern Colorado is our sole focus and heartbeat. just addressing human trafficking in a variety of ways. But still that heart to reframe with dignity and to help people change the lens through which they are viewing other people. Mm.
I love that. And I know people are going to want to get more information on A Face to Reframe. We'll be sure to have that information in the show notes so they can connect specifically with you all. Is there a way that also we can support you? Is there a way that we can give or donate?
Sure. I love that question. Yes, our website, A Face to Reframe, is where people can find out more. And we have a donate and take action page there, of course. Yeah.
Awesome.
You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and all those places.
Oh, well, I can't wait. I haven't had the opportunity yet to dive into that. But after this, our chat here, I will definitely be going and searching it out also, because it's very, very sad where we are in our society today. And I think your book, A Voice Becoming, is one that touches on some things that I don't think maybe you even had a thought that at the time this is coming out would have coincided with the Me Too, all that's happening to women, how we are exploited as our culture exploits us. The power in that. And Beth, you've got this. I mean, this book is awesome. What are your thoughts to that?
You're right. How would I have known, you know, what would coincide right now with the release of the book and what our culture is going through? But I know I had a sense. I had a sense enough that what we were offering our girls was insufficient. You know, that what I was seeing in our church and in our schools and just in our families was good. And I think intentional parenting is there. Our heart is there, but we tend to be focused on some of the wrong things. We do a lot of external control behavior management. I don't think that's going to change the hearts of our culture or the hearts of our girls or our boys. What I write about is that we need to lift their eyes to a bigger vision and a bigger story. And if we're not painting a picture of what that could look like, how do we expect any of their internal world to change? So for girls, that might mean the self-confidence, the strength to say no, to protect themselves, to stand up for themselves, to have a voice that comes against a culture that would still sexually demean them or make them second-class citizens in any way. For our boys, it means changing their internal world to want to be a different kind of man. And we can only do that if we're lifting their eyes to something bigger and greater and epic. If we're just trying to control that with behavior management or a lot of rules and regulations, we're not going to see heart change. And I don't think we're going to see culture change as a result.
Mm. We need to chew on that hard, and we need to be praying about this. We are at a kind of a pivotal moment, actually, in our society. If people go back and they actually study societies and how cultures have changed over time and they developed. I mean, this is kind of like this big, huge boulder. This is Mount Everest in the middle of our culture. And who would have thought that a first world country, as beautiful and gifted in the freedoms that we have, that we'd be sitting here suffering to a degree? And it's not just women who are suffering, but it's also the men. It's both sides. And trying to come up with a solution to do that. And your book talks a little bit about that. And I love it because it's a mother-daughter journey. And mm-hmm. You take off. In your journey, you talk about the rites of passage. What was it about this journey that you set out on with your daughter?
Mm-hmm. You know, rites of passage is something that we as Americans have just not figured out. But when we look at other cultures, when we look at history, we see that so many other groups of people have incorporated some sort of rites of passage. We usually hear more about it with boys, but it has existed with girls as well. And the closest we get to that here in America is for Christian girls, it's around the issue of their period, or it's talking about purity. And as a church, you know, at large, we have focused on those two things. And that's great. Those are great things. But we've made those kind of the pinnacle of rites of passage for Christian girls in our society. And I just don't think that's sufficient, certainly not in light of what our girls are facing. And so I wanted to create something that that was bigger and would lift her eyes. Yeah, that, actually, I start, my first sentence in the book is, I'm out to wreck her heart. I wanted to wreck her for that which wrecks Jesus. I wanted to break her heart for the things that break his heart, because I think that's a story worth living for, and that that would break the teen obsession with bodies, boys, and besties. I talk about that a lot, that we have to cast a vision for that. So the rites of passage was a year-long journey. It was a year long because I don't know about your kids, but mine have like a 10-minute attention span. And I knew that I couldn't sit down over one weekend and dump, you know, all this great information and expect it to really change her. It needed to be peppered throughout an intentional year. We needed to be able to dive in and go deep. And then 20 minutes later, we're off doing something silly and goofy again. And I needed to stay on it with her for that course of time for it to really change her. So that's why it was a year. I framed the year around God's questions to Hagar. So Hagar is the Egyptian concubine that is with Abram and Sarai when they leave Egypt and go to Canaan, and Sarai gives up hope that she's ever going to have a child, and gives Hagar over to Abram. And then she becomes pregnant, and Sarai begins to abuse her and mistreat her, and she runs, she takes off. And so at the well, on the way back to Egypt, God meets her, and he says, Hagar, where have you come from, and where are you going? And that's how I frame our year, because those two questions resonate with me as a woman, and I think that I thought they were perfect for our girls, because where are you come from? Where have you come from? Is such an important question. It grounds our girls in their family narrative. It gives them a deeper sense of who they are and who they've, what family they've entered into this world. It gives them context. But where are you going is essential for who they will become, and the story that God is writing through their life as an individual woman. And so that's how we framed the year. With a kind of a launch trip asking the first question, and a kind of a legacy trip as a conclusion asking that second question. And then in between, we had five categories that we focused on.
Oh, it's exciting. And you're going to want to pick up your own copy, because you're going to want to read these stories, because we cannot get to all of them, but you will have to pick up your own copy of A Voice Becoming, A Year-Long Mother-Daughter Journey into Passionate, Purposed Living. Well, you took a big journey, and some people would probably call you crazy, where you went to like another part of the world. It wasn't like you just went to another state or a little city to have a talk or a chat at a coffee shop. No, you took her on a trip. That was a Turkey.
Yes.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about your Turkey trip.
Well, let me start by saying I'm not saying that all moms will want to or can take a trip. So it's not about the trip. It's about going back to the place where the deepest roots are as the family. And where I talk to moms about, where is your story still tethered? Because that's probably the clue to what is most informing the development of your daughter. For us, that was Turkey. We lived there for 7 years as Christian workers. And my daughter was born there, and we moved back to the States when she was 4. And it has become a part of our family. It's as if we were immigrants. It feels like a lifetime that we lived there. And so it infuses so much of our family, and yet her memories were vague. She needed to go and see and smell and taste again. And it was interesting because I too felt tethered to that place. 8 years had passed, and yet I just felt like there was unanswered parts of my story and journey that God wanted to show me through his eyes, to take us both back there together. And so that's what we did. It was a surprise to her. I picked her up from school on her 12th birthday, and said, there's suitcases in the trunk, and we're going to Turkey today.
What was her response?
she burst into tears.
Aww.
She just started crying because she knew what that meant. Mm-hmm. And she was excited beyond words. She was thrilled.
Yeah, because she had never, before then, since she left it when she was four, she never really knew what you knew about Turkey, and that was her home to a degree. I mean, she grew up there, you know, mm-hmm. in her younger years, and so she could say, I'm from there.
Right. She loved saying she was from there. She loved saying, I was born in Turkey. But there was so much that was kind of vague and had become this mystical memory to her. It just felt surreal. She needed to be back there.
Yeah. What was one of the things that you discovered when you were there in Turkey that really helped shape you and your story?
You know, our time there was hard when we lived there. There was just a lot that we went through. And I felt this need to be strong, to have it all together. We were leading other people. I was a mom of babies and toddlers. There was no space for me to be anything less than strong. But I also had this sense that the women in the Bible that I was reading about and learning about were strong women. There was no space for them to be anything but strong either. And so I just had this impression of what I was supposed to be like, especially as a Christian worker. And when we went back, I went back just down memory lane, and I was remembering all the different things and then seeing it all as if through Hagar's eyes, and Hagar at the well, and God saying, I need you to go back to this abusive mistress. I need you to return, but go with this. I see you. And she names him El-Roi. I see you. And go with my promise. I'm going to give you descendants too numerous to count. And it was that, looking back at my years in Turkey through that lens and realizing, oh, she went back a strong woman, but she also went back a weak one. And that combination, being both strong and weak, was beautiful. And God blessed it. And God was with her. And so it felt like I was seeing the old Beth, you know, the Beth from 8 years ago through God's eyes, and being able to say to her, your strength and your weakness are beautiful. And can they live together? Can they reside together? Can you embrace them both and realize that that's actually who I call my women to be, is both strong and weak and reliant upon me. So it was this breaking for me of a mentality that I've had most of my Christian life. And it was wonderful.
Yeah, you wrote in your book, I quote here, through a long and tender process, God has shown me that strength and courage are as lovely to him as weakness. Mm-hmm. And when I read that, I honestly got chills. That's why I wrote it down. It was just something that I think we, as a woman, we're nurturers. We feel like we always are having to raise up to be stronger than even everybody else put together. We have to stand on our own. In reading that, it's like God says, you're just as lovely when you're weak as mm-hmm. you are when you're strong. And so rest in me, because I go before you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm. Yes.
A beautiful journey. Oh, my goodness. And this was only the very first, like the launching off. Holy cow. What were you thinking as you were going through this process? It wasn't just for your daughter, but you also were experiencing, like you said, you're old and then you're new, and you were reframing your story.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important. I have an early reader who just said to me last week, I didn't expect this book to be triggering so much in my own story. I thought I'd pick it up and it would be about raising my daughter. And I got chills, because that's my goal, is that moms would realize this is as much about them as it is about their own daughters. And our stories are intricately connected. And so many of us as women haven't really processed all of that. And here we are raising tweens and teens, and all this stuff is coming out. And I, you know, those of us who are truly like reflective are wondering, what is that? What was that reaction? Why did I respond to that degree? And why am I so sad about this? And more sad than she is? All these things that are coming out as we raise our own daughters. And to realize Yeah, that's your story. That is your story that God is beautifully weaving your daughters into. And what would it look like to discover that and discover it together and to name it, name different portions of your story for your daughter? And so that is such the goal of the book. And I bring my mom into it a lot. She and I are quite close, and I love her. And this book is not a response to her mothering in any way, but I did bring her in to various things that we did, and she found, you know, here she is 68 years old, and she discovered that her story is still unfolding as well, and that her life is still becoming. And that's my hope, is that all of us as women would realize our life is a journey, and it's a journey of becoming, and we get to do it together if we're willing to enter into that.
And you can experience that yourself when you pick up your own copy of A Voice Becoming, A Year-Long Mother-Daughter Journey in Passionate, Purposed Living. Well, from a mom's perspective, you take your daughter on this rites of passage. What was her liking to this?
That's a great question, because I was really scared starting it. And part of that is just unique to us. My husband is a counselor and kind of an expert in all things masculine. It's just been what he has studied. Not to say he's the epitome of manliness, but he has made it his life's goal and purpose to study masculinity. And so he had done a ton of research by the time our son turned 12, and he knew what really was important and needed for our son to transition into manhood. Well, That's our oldest child. And so everything that occurred with my son, my daughters were watching and waiting, and their expectations were growing, and their hopes and dreams were growing. And so I just felt like I had a lot of pressure. And my daughter is, you know, she and I are similar in a lot of ways, but different in a lot of ways. And I just knew I had to get it right. And I had to get a good read on her. And she needed to trust me. And so that was a little tenuous at the beginning, her trusting me and me really getting it right with who she was. But as we began with such a phenomenal journey back to Turkey and entered into the five categories that we did together throughout the year, she relaxed and allowed me to just go there and be intentional, and went with me with the conversations and participated in the books I wanted her to read and engaged in the films that we were watching. And she just ate up my intentionality. She soaked it in. And I realized, wow, this is so invaluable. It doesn't really matter what we're doing. She just needs this kind of focused attention on her. She loved it. She absolutely loved it. I could probably, you know, continue year after year being that intentional. But it did a lot for our relationship, honestly. And by the end of the year, she had matured so much. And my goal was to invite her into the company of women, to help her join us as women and join my friends more as a peer and less as a kid on the playground with their kids. And that was beautiful as well, to just feel like we've matured together this year. And you know who you are, and you know what you're becoming. And now you get to play alongside of us adult women, really as a sister. Mm. It was beautiful.
It is beautiful. Oh, in our busyness, I know you're probably struck with this all the time. You say, hey, how are you doing? I'm so busy. The busy word is one of the first things that comes out of our mouth. And I know I listen all the time. I'm highly reflective, but I think a lot of people out there, because they are so busy, they don't make time to reflect. They don't make time to go back to their story or to figure out their impact of their story on their children, because you talk a little bit about that in your book. Now, I don't want to go too far, because you've mentioned about these five categories. Mm-hmm. And so I want to name them for people. It's women lead, women love, women fight, women sacrifice, and women create. I thought that was absolutely beautiful. Of those five, what was kind of one of those that was, I want to take a different twist on it, that was most challenging to you as a mom, and then even having to bring up and allow your daughter to come into your story as you go back and reflect also?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Great question. All of them. I mean, in some way, I chose those five because they come out of my own struggle or, you know, in my own, those are probably the five areas that I continue to wrestle with. And I see them. I see them in my life, but I also see the gaps. I see the challenges. So in many ways, the answer to that is all of them. But I think women's sacrifice is probably the one that's most challenging. And I bet a lot of women would identify with that. In fact, I named that in the beginning of the chapter, like just hearing that word might have given some women goosebumps or the EBGBs or whatever. But I think as women, particularly in my life, I just see so many areas where I have been called upon to sacrifice, whether that's my own body to birth children that I was not prepared to do. Our oldest was a surprise and an interruption, honestly, to my plans. I was called to sacrifice my career trajectory. You know, ministry was not always my dream and passion and heart's desire. And I was called to sacrifice in all sorts of ways. And yet it became a yielding of my heart to the Lord. It was not a, you know, prostrating myself before my husband ever. It was more a yielding to God. And if I did love him and want to walk with him, how would my heart change to align to his? And it was in those moments that sacrifice took on a different meaning for me. And so to help to teach that, though, to a young girl who I was also saying, women lead and women fight and you can change the world. God wants to use you in powerful ways. And then women sacrifice. It felt challenging to teach her that. It was really challenging. And yet I knew it was really important to understand. We do that out of a place of strength. And it's a place of having a strong sense of self that we choose to yield. It is not weakness in the world's sense. It is not something to dread. It is truly beautiful. And so I knew I needed to teach that to her, but it was challenging to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is an excellent part in your book. It is. It's one of those grabbers. And while we're talking about the book in those five categories, I want you to explain a little bit about how you wrote the book. Because what I liked about it is, yes, you shared the stories, which allowed for the self-identification where I could say, oh, yeah, and I could kind of fit myself into the story or see and reflect. But then you went even further into the book and you gave questions at the end. Talk a little bit about how you formatted this book so it's not just a great read and then you set it down.
Yeah. That, you know, it's hard to create something that is part memoir in the sense that it was a, you know, it told the story of our actual year, but would be helpful to moms, to other women. I mean, that's what I wanted, was to spark a movement of women who would raise their daughters differently and engage the world powerfully. And so how to combine that was certainly a challenge. So I set it up with Hagar's questions and kind of framing the beginning and the end and then the five categories. I try to talk a little bit about why that comes out of our story and how as moms we have to engage our reaction to leadership or to passion with women fight or to create, what are we called to create? And I don't mean being a creative and artist. I mean creating life and beauty through who we are and what we do. And so where does our story intersect with that particular category? And then I used the books or the experiences or the films that I did with my daughter more just to illustrate, this is how you would do something similar. It doesn't have to be the same book, it doesn't have to be the same film or the same experience, but this is how I drew meaning out of those. This is where I saw metaphor and used metaphor to teach. This is how I brought in a girlfriend to just continue to enhance her experience of other women. So it was more a trying to paint a picture for what that would look like. I always focused on one particular woman in scripture and just talked about where I saw an example of women lead, women fight, women love in scripture. And then Ella's experience to show how she was being changed through it. And then, yes, every chapter ends with questions for mom to continue to explore their own story. And then just a chart, a simple chart to help those who need organization and need to kind of think, okay, how would I actually plan this? Who really wanted to get to the tangibles and the concrete, I provide a little chart for them to see, here's what I did, and here's a blank chart if you'd like to create something similar. But honestly, I did not want to create a program. I did not want this to be kind of another sort of program that, you know, churches would adopt or groups would adopt and just apply carte blanche. I really wanted to create a paradigm of thinking differently. And I wanted to inspire women to think big and to think different. And I hope I've done that in the book.
You have. You definitely have. Since I've read it, I can say you have. And I do, I think we have to stop being so shallow-minded. And I may get some emails on that, but that's okay. Send them to me. I'll talk to you. But it's one of those things where we just stay on the surface. And we go about our lives as to what we see that's right in front of us, and we don't go any further. We begin to miss out on our children. The teachers know your children more than you know them because they spend more time with them than you do, more waking hours with them. Mm. And yes, they're teaching and grooming them, but I think we miss some things. And I do pray that this is an awakening, that we take what we have. I mean, if you think about it, our children, whether they were planned or surprise blessing, that's how I look at them. Yep, they're a blessing no matter what, but they are a gift to us. And God is asking us to take these gifts and to raise them up so he can then have them serve out the purpose that he has already designed for their life. It's not, but we still have to do our job. It's not our job to create that plan for them, but we've got to raise them and bring them in, hence the rites of passage. And I think there's so much connected here, Beth, that I just, people have got to dive into your book. They just need to look at it with an open mind and an open heart, because I promise if they do, they will be blessed and they will see a different perspective, you know, than what I think they're living.
So thank you. I hope so.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. Well, looking back with all your wisdom, because now I know you have a ton. you've gotten three, and I have all three of them gone through their rites of passage. Has your youngest gone through?
Okay. No. Right. She turns 12 in May.
Oh, so are we in the process of planning that?
Yes.
Okay. We can't give any details. Beginning to think,
no.
No details. That's for another book, right?
I don't know. She would love that, right? When's the one going to be written about me?
Right.
Because my husband wrote one about our son, about his year as well. So there is a bit of pressure for the youngest to have something.
Well, maybe she could co-author with you.
Yeah.
And it could be a perspective there, so it hits the tween and teens, and so it's through the eyes of the young ones and what to expect, because you don't find those on the bookshelf either.
Right.
You know, what is it like? What is it like to go through and feel like you're in your book? You even write something about going in the bathroom and being handed the mirror, and you know, you close the door and, well, good luck with whatever you got to do, since you know you got to figure it out on your own. And come on, moms, we know what we're talking about here. So, yeah. So with all your wisdom, you know, you got a third one up and coming soon. What would you do differently, or maybe shift how you did something when it comes to raising your daughters?
Wow. Well, you know, I said I had to get my daughter right. There was, you know, I knew that. And so in that sense, I will definitely be doing things differently, because she's a different kid. She's a different girl, and it needs to be unique to them, because it needs to resonate with who they are, right? That's why it can't be a program. It needs to be connected to who they are as girls, for it to really be the most meaningful. So I am thinking about it differently just for that reason. It was fun to, as we went along with the year, to just grab hold of things that were happening currently. And so, I write about this, that I had a plan, I had a sketch, but I also was holding it loosely. And so when Malala came to town, for instance, perfect. You know, we went to see Malala. And so there's that sense too, where I know it's going to be different because next year is going to be different in our culture. If I was doing it right now, you better believe we would be addressing Me Too in a really powerful way. And I would be thinking through ways to make that conversation meaningful. And so we'll see what next year brings in terms of our culture and what our girls are going through and wrestling with next year. So it's important, I think, for moms to be adaptable and current. I did try to bring in a lot of history, and there were some things that were great wins and other things that were epic fails. So she went with it with me, but there was a lot of boredom in some of those films. And so just I would curate better, try to think a little bit more creatively about what we're watching and, you know, what I'm finding to draw upon meaning. Yeah, we need to be experts in that way if we really want to capture our daughters' hearts.
Yes, and the adaptability, I think we get stuck on our own little thing, and we forget that it's important that you start to learn the technology. You don't have to know everything, but you need to be where they are.
Right.
And I think that adaptability kind of falls into that, and if we don't stay connected with them, some people say, how do you talk to your kids now? And I said, well, there's two ways. One is technology. Some of them, I found that, man, they were into texting. And that's how,
right.
And I made sure that when my child's text came up, I responded. That was as if God was talking to me type of mm-hmm. a response. I mean, I made it to where they were a priority. And then it's sometimes on those trips that it's just you and your child and you're driving along and they're just going, and they won't stop talking. You know, you have to find, like you said, what works for the child, and they're so different. Mm-hmm. But as moms, and the more kids we have, we get kind of stuck in our own thing. And we're like, well, this one should be as easy as the other one. You know, I've had now three. I'm going on four. It's a piece of cake. It shouldn't be a piece of cake.
Right, right.
You know, God made us, you know, all unique. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's not that instruction manual that says this is the only way you can raise a daughter.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, you know, who my youngest is actually shaping some of the follow-up I want to have with the book. So I mentioned earlier I want to spark a movement of moms, and I really want to empower girls to join this global sisterhood I talk about. You know, that we, girl power is a thing in America because girls have rights, and girls have seen women break the glass ceiling and have an idea of what their future might look like. That's not the case in a lot of developing countries. And so how do we come alongside of God's heart for all girls, for all women, and how do we join our global sisters in using our privilege and our gifts and our skills to join them in what they're doing? And so I've been developing some partnerships with some really awesome organizations. And one of those is a result of kind of where my 12-year-old's passions lie, and that's with education. She kind of did her fifth grade project on girls' education in developing countries in Africa. And so I've been working on a partnership with Give Back Global Circle, which partners with World Vision Kenya. Once girls graduate high school, World Vision stops sponsoring those kids. So Give Back Global Circle has stepped in to mentor those girls and get them through college and get them into some sustainable business and careers. And so we're going to be partnering together to create a circle of moms and daughters that come alongside those girls and provide mentorship and sponsorship and hopefully a visit to that country. And that's a result of my 12-year-old. And so that's a concrete way of just really thinking, who is she and how do I really platform that inkling of a passion I see in her heart and open it, just explode it and see what happens as a result. So I'm really excited about some of those partnerships.
Oh, you will have to keep us posted on that so we can make sure we get that information out to the listeners and the viewers, because they're going to be people who I know will want to be involved in that. So definitely keep us,
great,
in tune with what's going on. We'll be sure to keep that information fresh on the on your actual webpage. Okay. Whew. I don't know about you, but man, after this journey, we need a break. You guys are going to want to pick up your own copy of A Voice Becoming, a year-long mother-daughter journey into passionate, purposed living. Well, I got to ask you the basic question. Why this book at this time with really the title? Because we haven't talked about the becoming part. And mm-hmm. you address that in your book. Mm-hmm. What drew you to A Voice Becoming?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was now, because now is, it's my life. It's where I am right now. And I write best out of just what day-to-day looks like. And so I wrote through that year and knew that I wanted to provide for other moms what I had been looking for, and just ended up creating myself. And so that's why the book, A Voice Becoming, came out of this, you know, what am I trying to capture in this year? I didn't want to call it a rites of passage. That just, I don't know. You know, we have our own stereotype or preconceived notion of what that means. I knew that would turn a lot of people off. What did I really want out of this year? I wanted her to have a sense of who God had created her to be and what he was calling her to do. And that, to me, was best encapsulated in this idea of a voice becoming. Just her voice as a woman, as a young woman, becoming more of who God has designed her to be. So that's where the title came from.
Mm. Well, I like the title personally. I think it's awesome. I honestly, when I picked up the book, I really wasn't sure what to expect. I always look at the titles and I'm like, okay, let's see if I can guess what the book is about. Before I read anything, don't know the author, I haven't gone to the website or anything, and I'm like, I got to see what this is. And yeah, I was totally blown away. And that was in a good way, totally a good way. And so I know people are going to gain something from this. As a writer, as an author now, you write this book. What is your hope that the woman on the other side is going to gain when they read it?
Mm-hmm. I hope that they're encouraged to follow in my footsteps. That sounds so vain, but encouraged to see, you know, I talk about myself being a fellow sojourner. And actually, that's what Hagar's name means, sojourner, which is so cool. But I want to journey alongside of moms as we raise these girls to be global sisters. And so I hope it's encouraging. I hope it gives moms a vision for how to be intentional. I think most moms want to be intentional, but not a lot know how to be or what that looks like. And I think a lot of women are like me, a little dissatisfied with what, you know, maybe we went through at their age or what is still out there. And so this is something a little different. And I hope that's encouraging to moms. Ultimately, I want to launch a movement that just engages moms and daughters to do incredible things in their own circles of influence, in their own little communities, and around the world. Because I think we're an incredible force to be reckoned with when our hearts are firmly set on Jesus' heart. And when we have really named the way that he's wired us and how he wants us to uniquely use that to bring goodness to the world. So if we can get moms and daughters to kind of identify that in their own lives, what's going to happen? I just can't wait to see what happens.
It is exciting. I'm excited, and I'm not even involved in it, but I feel like I am now. And you'll be involved too when you pick up your own copy of the book. It's just really an eye-opener. And I think it's a conversation that we needed to have about 45 years ago because things started to change then. You know, we started moving through technology, medicine, advancements in our culture. And I think we left some very important things out. Mm. And it's important. It's very sad when we are dropping our up-and-coming generations. Mm. And we're leaving them just kind of out there to like, okay, go to the jungle, good luck, because that's kind of how I was thrown in, you know. That's so unfair. Mm-hmm. And when you read your book, it's just one of those things, just like, wait, I still can have an impact. So what would you tell the mom who doesn't have quite yet the, you know, she's a younger mom. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe toddlers into elementary school. And she's like, oh, this sounds awesome. I want to do this. What would you tell her and what advice would you give her?
Mm-hmm. I think you're in a great season, perfect season to begin to process your own story and begin to name the places that most influence who you are as a woman, because those will be the ways that you most influence your children. And so start now. Read this book and start asking those questions of yourself and your own story, and start just thinking. I think it'll help younger moms read their children differently, or perhaps just with more intentionality as they're looking for where do I see hints of passion? Where do I see, leak their personality leaking, and just to begin to gather data while our kids are young, so that by the time they're 12, you are ready to go. You are ready to create some fabulous, intentional year, and you've already done the work yourself, and you've already gathered a tribe of friends, of other women who are like-minded sisters who are going to do it with you, and you're in such a better place than someone like me who was just stumbling along and did it on my own. And so I think for young moms, this is a great time. Great time to read it.
It is a great time. So then you have to move to the old moms.
Yes.
The old moms who said, oh, I missed the boat. And now already they're going, this was supposed to be my strength is my story and a pick me up. And now I'm like, now I feel guilty. And
no.
Almost as if, what would you tell them in that position? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. No guilt. No regret. We have all done the very best that we can with what we have. In fact, I saw a hilarious meme the other day that said, don't be so hard on yourself. The mom of E.T. and Elliot didn't realize she had an alien in her house for 3 days. So don't be so hard on yourself. I don't think it's ever too late. And like I said, I brought my 68-year-old mom along. And as a result of thinking through the framework of our year and the categories, she and I had some incredible conversations that were really meaningful to me that we've never had before. And I've seen that in other early readers who are doing this and entering into things with their moms as 45-year-old women that they never would have before. But I've also heard from moms who have older teens, girls in their 20s, and it's helping them go back and just have intentional conversations. It might not look like a full year. It might not look like all of the books and film and experiences that you might do when your daughter's in your home still, but you can still be intentional with the conversations you have. You are still a mentor in her life. You will always be her mother. I long for my mom to still impart nuggets of wisdom or just her perspective on various things. And so don't undersell your role in your daughter's life. It will only grow and deepen if you are intentional with her. Doesn't matter how old she is. Mm.
A Voice Becoming. You're going to want to pick up your own copy. I promise you, you will love it. Now, as you can see here on the cover, that is... a bicycle. why the bike on the cover?
I know. It was actually kind of quite a conversation with the publishers and to really convey the vision I had for the bike and why I wanted the bike. I didn't want moms to look at another book, just see a parenting book, a typical parenting book. I wanted to convey journey, adventure, something epic. And so for me, a bike is just a whimsical, fun, adventuresome thing. So that was part of it. But we took a bike trip. Our legacy trip, how we concluded the whole year, was my mom and my daughter and I biked 150 miles through the Netherlands. And we went on search of women who would illustrate the five categories that we had talked about all year. And so it was meaningful for that reason as well. It was actually how we ended our year, was on a bike, lost. asking the question, where are we going?
And y'all are going to want to pick up your own copy, seriously, because there are so many more stories. We could be here for another 2 hours talking about these own stories, but you're going to want to get them in your hand. You're going to want to hold it. You're going to want to reread them and experience your own story. So I know, Beth, people are going to want to connect with you. Mm-hmm. Where can they find you?
I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I'll be starting a Facebook group, A Voice Becoming. Love women to join and just carry on the conversation. And I'll be popping in there on a regular basis and doing live video. And that'll be where I really announce the partnerships and how women can get involved in those. So A Voice Becoming on Facebook. My website, bethbruno.org, and avoicebecoming.com will tell you all about the book and how to order it.
Fabulous. And we will have all that information in the show notes for you, so it's just readily at your fingertips. Well, before I let you go, I have one last question, Beth. The series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your story gifted you?
Oh, my story has been rich and complex and hard. And I would say that the greatest gift has been in those moments of hard and brokenness, where I've realized, oh, we're all broken, and Jesus loves us and cares for the brokenhearted. And when I embrace that brokenness and then follow him into the broken and the dark of the world, I just experience more of him and have loved him all the more. So it's been a gift to go back through my story and see those various moments and realize, oh, I'm a stronger person for it. That is my story. I love it. I'm going to love my story and live restored.
Mm. Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm giving you a hug across the airways. You are an inspiration. And I know you are encouraging women around the world with your story, with your journey. I know it's still in process, which is so amazing that this is not the stopping point. This is still, you got a long ways to go. So you'll have to stay in touch with us so we can continue that journey with you.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you so much, Christine.
Many blessings.
Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.